Okay, so we just took a look at Mizmor Lamed, chapter 30, which we're focusing on today because it's Hanukkah, and we start Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. Obviously, there's a nice linguistic connection there. I mean, this is also the Mizmor that, as we'll see, is recited at the end of davening on Hanukkah, either instead of the Shir Shal Yom or after the Shir Shal Yom. So, I think the former is the Minhag of the Gra. I think it's a little bit more common to say the regular Shir Shal Yom and then Hanukkah in addition. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, the arc of the shiur is why this isn't at all about Hanukkah, and then circling back to why it will be about Hanukkah. And we'll try to tie those pieces together. We noted already, we just pointed out, that there seem to be references to illness throughout the Mizmor. Like, one, if I asked you, like, what is the Mizmor about, or what is the poet writing about? What did he experience? So you would say illness, and you have a lot of references to that. You have Shivati Elecha V'atir Pa'eni in Pasuk Gimel. Right, you healed me. You have chiyitani miyar divor in pasuk dalet. You've given me life, literally. If you assume dami in pasuk yud refers to blood, which we'll note another interpretation a little bit later, then you have a reference to that. And in general, we seem to be talking about death here. Right, look at pasuk yud. Right, ma beta bedami buriditi al shacha. What would be the benefit if I descended into the pit, right, into the grave, into the underworld? That would be useless to you, Hashem. Hayodcha afar, hayagid amitacha. Could a dead person praise you? Could dust give you glory? Obviously not. So in some sense, we're talking about refuah. That seems to be one major theme. But it's not entirely clear. I think we noted this maybe one of our first weeks. This is a major motif that Amos Chacham, who... His story is very interesting. It's not for now, only because I haven't refreshed myself on the details of his life story, but he's a major Tanakh personality associated with the... with a lot of Tanakh projects in Israel, and he's the author of the Dat Mikra commentary on Sefer Tehillim. One of the points he makes over and over is that Tehillim has this really nice feature where it, for the most part, doesn't get so historically specific, mm-hmm. right? At no point is he describing, like, the particular illness that I had and how long I was ill. It stays on a fairly general level, and a negative of that is that it's sometimes hard to pick up on the specifics of a story, but a positive is that it's very universalizable. Like, I could relate to it, even if I never had scarlet fever, because it's talking about illness writ large. And it might even be that we could step, you know, even one step beyond that and say, it's not only that we're not being specific about what kind of illness, maybe we're not even being specific about what kind of tzara it is at all. So you have some references to tzara here that are not illness-based, like, for example, in Pasuk Bet, below simachta oivayli, my enemies didn't rejoice. So it could be that these are, you know, enemies of David who are, you know, political enemies are often joyous when their political opponents are ill, they may die, it's easy, and now's a moment to think about rebelling. But, and it could also just be that they weren't happy in any kind of suffering I had. It's not specifically related to illness. So you have some, you know, other possibilities. You have some odd language also a little bit later, which we'll note in the second section, you know, something like Zion Chatet, that also maybe isn't exactly illness-based. Okay, so we'll start from the beginning, and there are going to be a lot of, you know, issues to point out, but the first, obviously, is the superscription, the header of this Mizmor. Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. So this is weird already, just first of all because of its length, right? Most of the Mizmorim have shorter headings. Shir HaMa'alot, Mizmor La'asaf, they're usually 2-3 words, they're much shorter.
And written by somebody.
Often they'll be by a person, right? LeDavid, LeShlomo, Tfilah LeMoshe, Isha Elokim, things like that. So the specifics, like, here's when it was written or recited. It's not clear, like, Chanukat Habayit LeDavid is not so common. The other example is Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, right? That's another one where it tells you in the title, here's when it is said. Mm-hmm. But those are exceptional. So they're exceptional. Maybe they beg a little bit of explanation, and Midrashim do sort of tease out some of the details here. So that's part one. It's odd because it gives you that data. And the second thing that's odd about it is that it talks about Chanukat Habayit LeDavid, and then it doesn't really talk about a bayit. The word bayit doesn't come up again. The inauguration of a bayit certainly doesn't seem to come up again. So figuring out what that means is going to be important. There are a number of mefarshim on that, and that's where I focus the energy of the mefarshim today, because it really is a detail that needs to be unpacked a little bit. I'd like to do that after we just read through the Mizmor once, though, because once we see the details of the text, it'll be easier to appreciate what the commentaries are trying to say about the theme of the Mizmor. So, Aromimcha Hashem, I will be Miromim, So it means I will exalt, I will praise, but specifically the connotation of Aromim, or the Shorish Rom, is to elevate, to lift up. Ramal Kol Goyim Hashem. Hashem is above, you know, other nations. And there's a nice parallelism here between what we do to Hashem and what Hashem did for us, or what Hashem did for him. We'll use the singular, the person singing the song. You could personify him as David for the moment. Right? Aromim Hashem ki dilitani. He was dilitani, probably from the Shorish Dala, meaning to draw up water. So I will uplift Hashem, so to speak, because Hashem has uplifted me, so to speak. I was in the pit, I was lifted up, I was drawn up, and in turn, I owe it to Hashem to draw him up as well. This sense of sort of parallelism is going to be a dominant thing in this mizmor, as well as the, you know, inversion of that. You'll have a lot of inversions or opposites, and we'll note those as they come up. Velusi machta oivaili, Hashem, you did not make my enemies joyous. I'll notice I bolded the word simcha because simachta, because in Pasuk Yud Bet, we'll come to you at the end. You didn't make my enemies happy, but you did. Vata ezreni simcha. You've girded me in happiness. So I'm the beneficiary of that. So there's one of those inversions. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, shivati elecha vatirpeini. I've cried out and I've been healed. Again, seemingly right now we're talking about illness, but not necessarily. Hashem ha'alita min she'ol nafshi. Hashem, you have taken my nefesh, which probably in the simplest biblical Hebrew means my life, and you have raised it up from she'ol, which you could either understand a little bit more literally from the grave, or in slightly more like mythologized term, maybe the depths, the underworld, the sort of metaphorical language for that kind of thing, right? We talked, I think, two weeks ago about Yarkatei Tzafon, right? Sort of the Mount Olympus, so to speak, of the biblical world. It doesn't mean literally we think there's a mountain where the gods all hang out, but it's metaphorical figurative language to talk about. Chiyitani miyordei bor, you've given me life from my descent into the bor, or from those who've descended into the bor. You see the kriyuktiv there. So yardi means my descending into. So you've saved my life from descending into the pit, or miyordei bor, those who have already descended into the pit, you've plucked me out. Other people you have not plucked out, but I singularly have been blessed in that way. You might notice here, if you know, you're paying attention to very specific words, there are certain resonances throughout the mizmor to the story of Yaakov and Yosef, which coincidentally we read around Hanukkah time, maybe not coincidentally. So Sha'ol, where Yaakov says he's mourning for Yosef and his children kind of comfort him, and he says, no, ki ered al bini el Sha'ol. I will descend into Sha'ol, so to speak, with my son, who's also dead. Yosef descends into a boar, you know, at least one time when his brothers throw him into a boar, but also into prison, which is another kind of boar. So you have certain resonances there. And you see that kind of throughout the mizmor, one of the examples of a connection between the general language of the mizmor and a specific situation that's being picked up on. After Pasuk Dalid, the focus of the voice, the, I guess, persona of them is more shift. Sorry. First, I was talking to Hashem, Aromimcha, Simachta, you. Now I'm shifting to my audience. Right? I, as the speaker, am saying, Zamru la Hashem Chasidav, sing to Hashem. V'hodu lezecher kacho, give thanks to Hashem. And those two themes, Zamru, Hodu, also reappear in Pasuk Yud Gimel at the end. Leman yizamercha, chavod v'lo yidom, Hashem elokai l'olam odeka. Something about what happens in the mizmor is for the purpose of lema'an, that we should sing to Hashem, not be silent, but to sing and to praise and to give thanks. And now we have the first, maybe more explicitly theological kind of statement. Ki rega be'apo chayim birtzono. It is only a moment in Hashem's anger. Chaim birtzono. So first of all, chaim means life, is in Hashem's desire. Hashem chooses who to give life to. But I think by contrast to rega, rega is a moment, and chaim is the opposite of a singular moment. It's everything. It's the entirety of life is in Hashem's ratzon. But, and one example of that is ba'erev yalim bechi v'la bokarina. You could be in one moment in despair and suffering. That's a rega, but the morning comes and things could be better, right? The idea in our lived experience of, you know, a turnabout could happen in just a moment and things could become very good is, I think, what he's alluding to here in Pasuk Vav. Now we get to Pasuk Zion. If this were a movie and not a mizmor, I would call Pasuk Zion a flashback, right? I'm praising Hashem right now in this moment. So far, things are pretty good, right? Pasuk Bet to Pasuk Vav, I'm generally pretty happy. I know that Hashem could cause pain and suffering sometimes, rega ba'apo, But you have not done so. You've listened to my tefillah. Things were great. But things weren't always great. Va'ani amarti v'shalvi bal emot le'olam. I said in my peace and my security, maybe I had said to be slightly better, to make it clearer to flashback. I had said, bal emot le'olam, I will not shake. It's a weird word. Right? People don't really shake when they're in, I mean, they shake physically, but I guess emot has more of a sense of like being weakened, like the support of the building kind of, you know, teetering. We saw this also.
More like rattled. You know, like sometimes something will happen and sort of like emotionally, you know, like...
You get a jolt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have...
You get off your game.
Off kilter balance. A little bit. So that, I think, is what's going on with the word nivhal in a pasuk chet, for example. Right? Nivhal means I'm confused, I'm terrified, I'm, you know, I'm in a tumult.
I'm off.
I think emot generally is more... It's a word I think you would use more for like a building than you would for a person. I think that's generally the case. The language is a little bit odd. It's fine as a metaphor, right? I, as a building, I teetered. I was a little bit...
You're off your foundation.
Right. That might be... Right. Unpacking the metaphor is...
Your Derek Eretz is a little shaky.
Right, if that's the foundation, right? But what did I say? Let's just be explicit. Bal emot le'olam. I will never shake. Meaning... Ani amarti bishalvi. Things are good. Things will never be bad. The way of the world is that things are generally okay. It's a weird thing for a person to even think. Like, how could it be that you would think everything would just go well forever? But it's not an uncommon thing.
How old are you?
He's young. I'm gonna pause. No, I'm kidding. I think younger people might have this thought. It makes a lot of sense. A younger person to think, I haven't encountered so much challenge in my life yet.
Or if you think you've been so successful and you've prevented so many things, you've escaped so many things, the car accident didn't kill you, you rebounded, you didn't go bankrupt, you didn't do this, everything was fine, and then wham!
Right, and the wham is exactly what's coming now, right? I thought everything's going to be great. Hashem, Birtzon Chahem Adeta Laharariyos. You've desired to turn me into a Harariyos. Either you've given my mountain strength or you've turned me into a strong mountain, right? Also, this kind of physical imagery, but I had this power. I was in a great, strong position. But he starts to fanacha when you turn your face from me, Haisi Nepal, right? Just like I said before, my foundations would never be shaken, but I actually was kind of shaken. I was very confused and petrified by this experience. It almost sounds like the point is that in Pasuk Zion, I claimed, oh, everything's going to be great. And it's almost like Hashem is teaching me, actually, you should know, I can invert that, right?
I was the one
who made everything great, and I'm also the one who can make things not great. And that's another one of those inversions that we're talking about, right? Things are very solid, no, things are very shaky. I neglected to mention this before, back to Pasuk Vav. Rega ba'apo, chayim b'rtzano. Erev, boker. A lot of opposites. Exactly, being mentioned here. I saw one commentary describing this mizmor as a pendulum, right? There's a lot of just swinging back and forth between the good, the bad, the stable, the unstable, the day, the night, and so on. So it almost sounds like the point is to teach us that. And then, Elecha Hashem Akrav, El Hashem Etchanan, I called out to you, Hashem, to my God, my Lord, so to speak. I prayed, made requests. Ma betza bedami beriditi al shachat. What is the value of dami, which again either could mean blood, it may also mean silence. I might mean that because in the last pasuk as well, lamani zemercha chavod velo yidom. I should sing out and not be silent. So what would be the value in silencing me, so to speak? I'll go to my grave and I won't be able to say anything anymore. Mm. What would be the benefit in that? Beriditi al shachat, my descent into the depths. Ma betza, by the way, is another one of those Yosef references, right? Yehuda says, ma betza, kill our brother as opposed to selling him away. Right? What's the value in it? So there's no value in it, obviously. Hayodcha afar, can dust give thanks to you? Hayagid amitacha, can it share your truth, but also your reliability? And that has that sort of dual connotation of philosophical truth, but also your steadfastness and faithful. Shema Hashem v'chanini, here... be gracious, Hashem Haye Ozerli, help me. And Hafachta Bispidi, right? If you want to talk about inversion, right, the idea of Hafach, it literally means inverted, right? Venahapohu. There's a midrash in Vayikra Rabbah that talks about, that reads this more as relating to the Purim story. I didn't present it as too far afield for us, and it's also Hanukkah, Purim, it'd be too confusing, but the idea of inversion is very much critical to this mizmor. Things were solid. Hashem is able to invert it, and Hashem teaches me thereby that he can invert it, and he's the reason things are good. He's also the reason things are bad. And when I realize what my role in the world actually is, which seems to be to be modet Hashem, to thank Hashem, to be able to be mizamer, lamani zamercha chavod v'lo idom. Once I realize all those themes and all those values, Hashem could turn things back again, make things better again, now that I understand my proper orientation to and relation to Hashem.
Please. Why does the English say, be my helper?
From the word ozer. So ozer means help, right? Ezra.
Yeah.
Be help. Give me help. But be my helper, to me, it sort of subjugates Hashem. You're my little helper. That's how I read it.
Interesting. It seems to not have that connotation here.
Okay.
I think I share your gut.
We can't do anything without the help of Hashem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Help me. Help me. Now be my helper.
Well, that's the way it's translated.
I know. It's
a good translation. Heye ozer means be a help to me.
Be a help.
Maybe a help is a little bit better than a helper.
Yeah.
Be my helper.
If you go to Shmon Esrei, right, as we call at the very end of the first bracha of Shmon Esrei, it's Melech Ozer Moshiach Umagen. I don't think the connotation is helper as in I'm the primary being and you're helping me out.
It's
I think
not
it means.
That I don't know Hebrew.
Well,
isn't that strength?
Oz Ayin Zion is strength.
Oh, spelled different.
But Ayin Zion Reish is help.
Reish makes a difference.
Yeah, so it's a different show.
Well, it's the opposite side of, you're either strong or you need help.
It happens to be, it's a nice, I wouldn't call it a pun, but you have that wordplay here, right?
Yeah.
Pasuk Chet, you have Lehari Oz,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, but Hashem could invert that, but Hashem, when you are my Oz there, then I am able to be stronger. So maybe there's a little bit of, intentional or unintentional wordplay there.
Okay, good.
Thank you. That's a good question. In general, right, if I was dealing with, if I knew Biblical Hebrew perfectly and my audience knew Biblical Hebrew perfectly, I wouldn't use translations, and I think you'd avoid some of those issues, right? Part of it is just the word helper has subtlety in English that I don't think it has in Hebrew.
Perfect explanation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's finish our inversions, right? Pasuk Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, we're talking about the salvation itself. We're talking in the present, I am currently thanking Hashem. Back to the past, here's the flashback of how I had to learn this lesson about how Hashem works. Back to the future. Hafachta misbedi, you've turned my misbed, my mourning, my eulogy maybe, or dirge I've seen translated, lemacholi, into a dance. That's obviously another example of an inversion. Hafachta literally suggests that, and also goes to show the extremity of both sides, right? Misbed means mourning, right? It's not that you've turned my sickness into health. You've turned my literal death. It's almost like you're imagining yourself mourning for your own death, or the mourning of other people on you, to machol, to very advanced liveliness, right? Dancing is not just being alive, it's activity, it's vibrancy. Pitachta saki, you've taken away, you've released my sackcloth. V'tazreini simchan, you've girded me instead with joy, not with other clothing. I mean, obviously there's clothing involved, but the joy here is what you're replacing the sack, which is what you wear for mourning. Lemani zamercha, what's the purpose? Lemani zamercha chavod velo yidom. You should sing, you should praise Hashem, you should not be quiet. You should be active and vibrant and not still and silent. Hashem alokai le'olam odeka, and I will forever give thanks to you in this way. Okay, so a lot of the major themes, especially this inversion of fate and how that sort of shows and orients a person to understanding the world and knowing that good times aren't necessarily permanent, but what is happening in your life is contingent on Hashem. So things could be good for a while, but Hashem has the ability, first of all, to, end that and to bring it back. And so knowing that Hashem is the source of all of that seems to be the educational content of this mizmor. So we're left with a couple of puzzles, right? The first puzzle is, what does any of this have to do with the Chanukat Habayit LeDavid? That's the first, puzzling issue that comes up. You have a lot of interpretations that come up in Mefarshim, starting from Pasuk Bet, Pasuk Gimel. I'm sorry, Source Bet, Source Gimel 2 and 3. We're not going to read all of them in detail, but outline some of the major dynamics. So Ibn Ezra here starts, and I'll read from the English in the interest of time. So some say that David commanded the singers play the psalm at the dedication of the first temple, meaning it's Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid, meaning David wrote it and gave it to Shlomo so that Shlomo could use it when he built the Beit HaMikdash. David wasn't able to, but he wanted to be a part of the process, so he, as described a lot throughout Divrei HaYamim, Shmuel Malachim, the idea that David supported the building of the Mikdash. Others say it's about the second or the third Beit HaMikdash, so that would mean it's prophetic, right? It can't be something David himself is witnessing, but it would work, and part of the imagery here is, for David, as I will explain, compares the days of exile to days of illness. So that's what I meant when I said, even though it seems to be talking about illness, it doesn't need to be talking about a literal sick human being. It could be a national illness. That is the case. He also brings other interpretations. Perhaps, as he says in the second paragraph, it's about when David inaugurated not his Beit HaMikdash, but his own house. He built a palace for himself. And when he built the palace, coincidentally, he fell ill at the same time. And so at the time he was inaugurating his house, he had also recovered from his illness. And so he's giving thanks at the time he's inaugurating his house. Related to some of the earlier interpretations, he quotes a Rav Moshe, I didn't mention here, Ibn Jekatela. He's an early commentary. We don't have much of it on Tehillim, but we have fragments of it. He says that David mourned when Nathan told him he would not build the Beit HaMikdash, but then he rejoiced when he found out that David would build it instead. For his son is like himself, and the enemy would not taunt David, meaning the Oivim that we mentioned, they are not going to taunt David for his inability to build the Beit HaMikdash. And what is the illness? The illness is a spiritual affliction, feeling just depressed and disenchanted by my inability to do this thing that I want. I felt so low that I couldn't build the Beit HaMikdash. But then, I found out that my son would do it, and I would be very happy because he would take over that place. That's how a number of interpretations. You're noticing that they're all basically, you know, these interpretations are all assuming that there's a connection to the inauguration of a real bayit, and how do you explain all of the illness imagery? So either it's a spiritual, psychological illness, I'm despondent that I don't get to build the house, or it's exile, the exile that precedes the building of the Beit HaMikdash, as Ibn Ezra suggests, and we'll come back to that theme very shortly. Radak is a similar theme. It's about how David was concerned that his enemies would think that his melucha would not last. Why? Because of his sin with Bathsheba, and the people couldn't imagine that Shlomo, right, the product of that Avera, would eventually become the next king. They couldn't imagine it, and the enemies would rejoice as to that. But when he discovered that Shlomo would build the Mikdash, he realized that his legacy would live on, and that his enemies would all realize that he would be the future leader, the future king. Malbim psychologizes it. He moves in the opposite direction, right? What is Chanukah to Bayit with David? It can't have anything to do with a real Bayit. He says, this Mizmor was established to give thanks when he fell ill and recovered from his illness. That's clearly what the Mizmor is talking about, right? It's the first thing we notice, all the illness imagery. And there's no mention of the inauguration of the house, so why are we calling it that? So he says, what is the house? The house is a metaphorical house. The metaphorical house is my body in relation to my soul. My real essence is my neshama. It's my spiritual essence. The Chanukah Habayit is the body that houses it. So what's the Chanukah? I was sick. Now I'm reinaugurating myself in health to be able to serve Hashem properly, and the house is now functioning the way it's meant to. So it's really about illness, and the Bayit imagery is just a way to talk about one's body as a Bayit. So that's how Malbim takes it. It ends up with a psychologically very powerful kind of theme, but one that is not very integrally connected to the real idea of a real bayit. The bayit is just imagery, and we had that also, right? Balamot le'olam, or harari'o, is this imagery of a strong house. That's also just a way of referring to a strong body. You have midrashim that draw connections between the human body and the Beit HaMikdash, and then between the Beit HaMikdash and the universe, so we have like multiple senses of forms of bodies that are being integrated in midrashim. So it could work as a nice interpretation. I do find it, in some ways, very inspiring. The final possibility is alluded to in this pasuk in Devarim. This is the pasuk in Devarim talking about how the Jewish people would go out to war. And one thing they would do is they would let certain people go home from war. They get an exemption from the military if they are newly married, if they just planted a vineyard, or if they just built a house. Asher bana bayit chadash v'lo chanacho. If you built a house but you have not inaugurated it, you go home from war. So it sounds like inaugurating a house is a significant minhag. that people took very seriously. You'd get, you know, an exemption from the military to be able to do so. So maybe this is a song about a real physical house, but it doesn't really explain anything about the illness, right? That interpretation has a hard time understanding the salvation imagery, right? What salvation is there involved when you're building a house? It's a little bit hard to understand. I think we might get to one other interpretation when we try to consider the liturgical uses of this mizmor. We've been talking about the mizmor as part of Tanakh. Now let's talk about it as part of a seder. Right? What's it doing in situations where it's being recited? So there are three areas where this mizmor seems to be recited. The first is Hanukkah, which we'll offer an explanation for based on an idea of Rabbi Yitzchak Etshalom, who's a rabbi in LA. It's recited daily, right? Before Psukei Dezimra, you have that, then you have Baruch Sha'amar. And we have a number of sources of it being recited in the Mishnah, or what seems to be in the Bayit Sheni period, and it seems to be quite significant there. It's not exactly clear why it's being used there, though I think we'll have a theory for it as well. The first example is in source number 7 by the Bikurim. So when Bikurim would be brought into the Beit HaMikdash, so there's the Mishnah and Bikurim describe elaborate processions, exactly how the process would be done. And as part of the procession of the Mikra Bikurim, you would bring, you would recite this mizmor. The Leviim in the Beit HaMikdash would sing our Mimcha Hashem Ki Dilitani Velosi Machto Evaili, our Parak of Tehillim, when the Bikurim would be brought. Similarly, in source number 9, which is 8 for the time being, this describes the process by which the walls of Yerushalayim would be enlarged. You're able to enlarge the walls of Yerushalayim, and with it, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. There's an elaborate ceremony described there for doing so. And one of the parts of the ceremony, besides a wide musical accompaniment, besides the king and the Kohen Gadol and tons of people participating in the procession, is again our mizmor, our Mimcha Hashem Ki Dilitani. That's very interesting that this mizmor seems to be very important to, let's say, Jews in the Bayit Sheni period, perhaps, right? Jews who are involved in some of these rituals. Why is it so significant here? And then we ask a related question. Why is it significant in Hanukkah? But Hanukkah, we say, Arumim HaShem, in verse number 10, this is Mesachet Sofrim, it describes the liturgical minhagim, at least from the period shortly after the Gemara, but a lot of them have stayed, including this mizmor, Arumim HaShem Ki Dilitani. This is worth noting. Usually when Chazal refer to a mizmor, they don't refer to it with the heading, like Shir HaMaluk. They refer to it by the first pasuk of like the content of the mizmor. So you'll notice all of them are calling it Arumim HaShem, and they're not calling it Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LeDavid. Which is how they refer to the mizmor. It's an interesting note. Okay, so let's talk about why a person would have thought this is related to Hanukkah. Because I think that'll actually shed a little bit of light on all of these details, all these situations where it's being recited. So you could answer the question kind of locally. There's certain references in the mizmor that if I was a Chashmonai and I read this mizmor, I could see how I would interpret it as being related to my experience. So I have Chanukat HaBayit. Obviously, that's first and foremost. I have a reference to Harari Oz, so the mountain of strength, which maybe is now Yerushalayim after they've reconquered it. I have the idea Lo Simachto Oivaili, and the idea of Venahapochu in general. Like, we thought we would be, we're a much smaller army compared to the Greeks, but we were able to win anyway. We have reference to the Chasidim in Pasuk Hei, Zemrul Hashem Chasidav, and Chasidim was a term that certain groups in the Bayit Sheni period used to refer to themselves, so maybe they would have seen the word Chasidim and said, oh, this is related to my experience. So that could be, but if we contrast what the Chashmonaim were experiencing to maybe how Bayit Rishon Jews were thinking about themselves, maybe there's a slightly different explanation. This is what Rabbi Etshalom suggests. He says, what did the Jewish people think during the Bayit Rishon period about the Beit HaMikdash? They probably thought, Pasuk Zion, Bal Emot Le'olam. They thought, and Yirmiyahu talks about this all the time, they thought the Mikdash is impregnable. Nothing's going to happen to it. So the Nevi'im are telling me how everything is going to be terrible, we're going to be punished, and I can't imagine that. I know the Mikdash is Hashem's house, he's never going to destroy it. Then he learns with Hisarta Panecha, a little Hester upon him, and everything breaks down, the Har Oz collapses, and the Mikdash is destroyed. But we, instead of being exiled forever and silenced forever, we were brought back. We had the Bayit Sheni period. We were able to rebuild the new Beit HaMikdash. And this inversion was not a personal inversion, but a national inversion. It was my realizing that the strength of Yerushalayim is contingent on my serving Hashem properly, with Zimra, with Hoda'ah, with all of these values that the Mizmor is talking about. So the inversion that we've talked about, or the several inversions from, you know, good to bad, that's recognizing that the Mikdash isn't impregnable and it isn't our strength and we're not going to be able to last forever without Hashem, to realizing through the experience of Galus and then rebuilding with the Bayit Sheni period that no, we actually can have these things as long as we're properly relating to Hashem. And that might explain both why in the Bayit Sheni period these descriptions of Bikurim, of extending the walls of Yerushalayim, both of them focusing on the Mikdash, on Yerushalayim, the city, and on Hanukkah, we might think, okay, I'm in the city of Yerushalayim, I'm in the Mikdash, and I should remember that what I used to think about the Mikdash is Balamot Le'olam, but I've learned the educational process was not only a personal educational process, but also a national one. And so that, I think, might explain very well why Chashmonai would have read this Mizmor and thought, oh, this is about us. Because we've learned properly that we had a position of strength, we've descended from that, and we're finally back. And not only are we finally back in our land and finally back with the Mikdash, that had happened a while ago, but we're finally back autonomously in control. Like, this is a high point for the Bayit Sheni period. We've rebelled against the prevailing powers, we have autonomy. It's one of the major themes, major focuses of Hanukkah. And so the Mizmor here is reminding us, we should know that we have these great things, we should know that we have autonomy and independence, and we should know that it's all dependent on Hashem. And we could descend very easily back into Sheol, back into Galus, as Ibn Ezra had previously said. And that's one of the nice features of the Mizmor being non-specific. Right? If it had been very, very deep into the illness imagery, it would have been harder to interpret it as a national Mizmor. But with the imagery being described as it is, and the mixing of metaphors, the references to seemingly houses and strength, made it very possible to read this Mizmor in this way, which emphasizes the focus on Hanukkah in a way that I think is really... really compelling, right? And it sets as a major theme of Hanukkah, or the Bayit Sheni period in general, that you should know the difference between the Bayit Rishon period and the Bayit Sheni period. That Bayit Rishon, we thought everything was going to go great forever. It was going to be perfect. And we learned that's not how it works. But we also learned that when we serve Hashem properly, that is something that we're able to have. And I think that's a really powerful way to take the end of this mizmor. Let's see. Yeah, I'll stop here.